We have a packed show coming up for you. Breaking up Telkom, Top TV going prepaid, and Nokia's strength in the SA market. Stay tuned for Talk Central.
J&M, how may I help?
Polly, you're not going to believe what we just got in the office.
Betty Sue, you tell me and you tell me right now.
An IP-hosted PBX that is customizable to our needs.
What will they think of next? That's so swell.
And it's affordable.
That's so neat. You sure are lucky, Betty Sue. We're still stuck in the past.
Times have changed. So should your PBX. Get Virto from Vox Orion, a hosted IP PBX solution for your business that offers fantastic savings. Available from 65 Rand per user per month. For more info, SMS your name to 45678.
And we'll call you.
Welcome to Talk Central, the business technology podcast brought to you by South Africa's technology news leader at techcentral.co.za. I'm Duncan McLeod. I'm here with Craig Wilson. Hi, Craig.
Hello, Duncan.
So, lots of stuff to talk about.
It's been a while again. It's been a bit slack.
Yes, since we did a podcast, indeed. But we'll talk about the current stuff rather than the stuff going back to the time we recorded our last podcast, which I think was about 3 weeks ago. But yeah, plenty to talk about. National Planning Commission has put out its latest copy of the National Development Plan, 400 and something page document.
Some light bits I'm reading, yeah.
I haven't gone through all of it yet, but I certainly have gone through the section dealing with ICT. And yeah, I'm impressed. I think it's a big improvement on the draft.
Absolutely.
Plan which came out, I think, late last year now. And generally pro-markets, pro-competition.
A lot of really, really strong sentiments and suggestions.
The sort of stuff we've been wanting to see in the telecom sector in South Africa for years and hasn't been happening.
The sort of stuff you don't usually hear from government about it.
Yes.
I suppose it has something to do with the National Planning Commission's sort of designation and its role that it gets to make these sorts of comments. And it's nice to see that it seems to be living up to its mandate and making some really sweeping suggestions for the sector.
Yeah. The big issue, of course, is whether the important aspects of the National Development Plan, especially the stuff that is pro-free market, is actually going to be implemented by the ANC government.
Indeed. Yes, this is, I suppose, the other obstacle is seeing a lot of the ideas are great on paper, but will they actually make it past the ANC's sort of vetting mechanisms?
Yeah. I mean, we're seeing statements from government that there's no way that Broadband Infraco, for example, will be privatised. There's no way that Sentech will be privatised.
Mm,
in fact, that there's talk now in ruling party circles of renationalizing Telkom, which would go, I think, fly in the face of what the National Development Plan talks to.
Indeed, absolutely. It would go completely the opposite direction. I mean, I think, and not just the plan, but industry, the private sector in general is largely opposed to this move, and I think with very good reason.
Mm.
But of course, there's lots of news, lots of sort of to do with Telkom in this generally. I mean, the problem, too, is that the suggestions of rolling Telkom and Broadband Infraco and company, actually getting them closer is perhaps not what we need at all. What we need is government to be less involved rather than more involved in it.
Yeah, absolutely. The one other interesting suggestion that comes out of this document is, it is listed as a possibility only, and of course everything that's in the National Development Plan is only suggestions. It still needs to be discussed at government level inside the ANC as well.
And of course there's no official obligation for government to take up these suggestions.
No, but one of the proposals that's been put forward in the plan is to break up Telkom into two separate companies, technically known as what do they call it? Structural separation, breaking Telkom up into separate wholesale and retail divisions.
Mm.
And I think there's
not a terrible idea.
There may be merit in that. Certainly, they've done it in other markets. BT, the UK didn't go as far as structural separation, but they certainly introduced policies and regulations that separated, not fully, but created a new business in Openreach, which managed BT's last mile into homes and businesses.
Well, I think that's the point. We've had some comment on the site this week too from some of our columnists and in recent weeks about the potential merits of sparing Telkom the burden. Telkom, as we all know, claims the access line deficit, or that it costs them money to run and maintain every line in service, in part because of the aging network. And at least on paper, there seems to be quite a lot of sense to the argument that if you have a wholesale network that then resells these services and this last mile access, It relieves Telkom of some of that burden and some of that cost.
Mm.
If it could split it into a retail and a wholesale division and leave the wholesale division to actually administer the physical aspects of the network itself.
It certainly get things moving, I think. And certainly, just referring to some of the columnists, Dr. Foss of QED Solutions wrote an interesting piece this week suggesting that that perhaps Telkom should sell off that last mile, that loss-making last mile.
Precisely, yeah.
And, perhaps develop it in conjunction with the internet service provider community, which
has a vested interest in keeping it up and exactly. keeping it, and not only maintaining it, but improving it, so that they can sell better services on top of it, and higher speed offerings, and the sorts of things that we still dream about late at night when we imagine what it must be like to have what we jokingly call first world internet.
Yes,
even the best lines we can get are still trailing, and there's this worry that we're not even just falling behind the rest of the world; we're falling behind the rest of Africa. So I'm sure the internet service providers would be only too delighted to get stuck in. And actually, have a role in the network's development and where it heads in future.
Mm. And certainly, it's in the competitive internet service provider market where we've seen the greatest innovation, and the greatest price cuts for that matter as well. Certainly hasn't been on the Telkom monopoly side of it, where the cost of renting a DSL line from Telkom is still exorbitant.
And still includes the famous Telkom tax of the phone line, which increasingly, as we know, especially amongst my peers, nobody wants.
Yeah,
we don't want a fixed line. All I want is a data service because it's all I use.
Yes.
Anyway, these are some of the many obstacles that we're well versed in, I suppose.
But anyway, good document, National Development Plan. It's available at NCP Online, NPC Online, National Planning yes. Commission Online, .co.za. Full copy of the PDF is available there. If I recall correctly, the section on ICT starts on page 189. And it's well worth a read. Go download and take a look at it. Craig, since we recorded the last podcast, of course, Telkom has also been fined by the Competition Tribunal an amount of 449 million rand for anti-competitive behaviour.
Some people are saying it's far too little, and some people are saying it's far too much. Mostly Telkom saying it's too much. But
yeah, I mean, it seems fair to me. I mean, Telkom is in a precarious financial position. If they'd imposed the full fine, which the Competition Commission had been seeking, which was somewhere between, well, it was initially 3.5 billion rand.
Then it went down to
1 billion rand.
Yeah.
And the eventual fine was just under 500 million rand. I think it's a fair fine. It's not too small. Telkom, it would have been wrong, I think, just to give Telkom a slap on the wrist.
Mm.
It was a really evil monopolist back in those days. It was out there to kill competition, and expand the terms of its monopoly beyond what was intended under legislation.
Mm.
And the company has behaved very badly. Obviously, this all happened under a different management team and a long time ago. It's just sad that it's taken this long for the decision, for this whole matter to reach some sort of finality. And of course, again, it may not have reached finality because we still don't know if Telkom's going to appeal against the decision.
And in fairness, I think there's a great likelihood. Part of the reason it's taken so long to get here is that Telkom has objected and appealed and generally opposed every step of the way to date.
Yes.
I think there's little reason to believe that it won't continue to do so.
Yes.
But there is also, there's some arguments that perhaps Telkom will accept the decision, but I wouldn't be betting on it if I were that sort of man.
I mean, the old joke is that Telkom is in fact a law firm masquerading as a telecommunications operator.
Indeed. And you can be sure that they will have done the calculations on what the, drawing it out is likely to cost them in legal fees. And it's certainly going to be, although it'll be astronomical, it'll be less than 449 million rand, which seems like a good incentive to keep fighting. But yes, the fine, the sort of measure of the fine seems to be fairly reasonable. Of course, a lot of people have said it should have been even more. But the other thing to bear in mind is that the Telkom of today, whether we look at the share price or the market cap, is not the Telkom of the days when the sort of the problems arose. Mm. Telkom is worth a fraction of what it was a decade ago.
Yes.
And the fine is perhaps commensurate with this.
Yeah. And as I said, the Competition Tribunal could not have let them get away with a slap on the wrist because that would have just encouraged more abusive behaviour in the remaining parts of its monopoly.
And by other parties.
Yeah. In fact, I was chatting to Carl Pinar, the MD of MTN South Africa, mm-hmm. after the results presentation last week, and we were chatting about Telkom, and he said he thinks it's a fair fine as well because it's going to keep us in check and stop us from engaging in behaviour that could attract the attention of the Competition Commission. So he says it's going to keep everyone in the industry in check, and for that reason he thinks it's a good thing. Of course Telkom may appeal, so we'll watch this space.
Of course, as you pointed out too, one of the commenters on one of our stories made an interesting point about where the fine goes when one considers that government is a majority stakeholder in Telkom.
Yes, and of course Telkom this year suspended dividend payments for the first time, I think, since it was listed. The commenter suggested, I don't think there's any merit in the suggestion, but it's nevertheless entertaining, suggested that instead of, government's not getting its normal dividend through Telkom this year, but it is getting a nice big chunk of money through into the national fiscus through the Competition Tribunal.
Absolutely.
Extra dividend in inverted commas for government or for the National Treasury. Craig, Top TV has launched prepaid. I went down to Soweto, when was it, a Wednesday. Top TV, obviously the first and only so far satellite pay TV competitor to DStv and MultiChoice. Mm. Went down to the launch event, which was beset by gremlins. Presentation took about 20 minutes to start because of problems with the PowerPoint and all sorts of drama like that. I guess it had something to do with them doing it inside a cinema theatre. But Top TV, they haven't done all that well, have they? They got 165,000 active customers.
Of a 300,000 odd base, isn't it?
360,000 decoders. Well, I've seen conflicting numbers, but chatting to the technical guys at Top TV yesterday, they say it's 360,000. I've heard one of the managers saying it's closer to 400,000.
But of which only 160-odd are active.
So well less than half are actually active on the Top TV network, which suggests they've got some serious problems with churn or issues with their customers being not able to afford the service.
Mm.
It's probably a bit of both. You know, they're not targeting the top end of the market like DStv is with its DStv premium service. And I guess they also have challenges with the DStv Compact service, which MultiChoice launched around the time of Top TV's launch, obviously to try and keep the new competitor from taking a lot of market share. Well, it was definitely in reaction to Top TV's launch at the time. I think launching prepaid, particularly in the market segment that Top TV is focused on, is a smart move. We've seen how popular prepaid. I mean, prepaid just exploded. It just caused the massive explosion we saw in the cellular industry. I don't see no reason to believe that the same phenomenon won't work in television. And especially in poorer households, I think it's an issue. You know, signing up to a subscription where your money gets taken out of your bank account every
certainly
month.
Certainly, even in my household, I try not to sign up for anything. I'm a fierce advocate of anything I can prepay or just not be committed to.
Yeah.
No, I think the model has a lot of merit.
So, yeah.
In a flush a month, too. You know, the fact that there are different packages.
Yeah.
There's
two packages available at the moment. I haven't got the pricing in front of me here, but
I can't recall
it's around 100 Rand and around 300 Rand, I think.
Indeed. And you can imagine that, you know, perhaps you'd stick to the lower one, but on the odd windfall month, you might feel inclined to ratchet it up, or if there was something particular coming up that you wanted to see, it's nice to have the option of switching. Of course, you can switch from the lower package to the higher package at any time.
Yes,
you can only do the reverse at the end of a sort of at the end of the month after the purchasing the higher package, which again makes sense.
Yes,
but. I think the prepaid model has a lot of merit. I think it's worked in electricity as well. It's worked in things outside of cellular, and there's no reason it can't work in television.
Yeah. I think Top TV's biggest challenge is it doesn't have any real live sporting coverage.
Indeed. Of the licensing fees this costs.
Yeah.
And the exclusive rights.
The competitor has signed up all the major sporting codes. Rugby
And probably
rugby, soccer and cricket, if I'm not mistaken. I don't watch cricket, but I think it's also exclusively on the DStv platform. But certainly the PSL soccer and Super 15 Curry Cup rugby,
sure,
is all exclusive to the DStv platform. I'd imagine, given the target market for Top TV, that they'd really need to break into that local soccer market. Mm. So I don't know if they're focusing on that at all. But I wish them luck. Moving on, Craig, the Arthur Goldstuck from Worldwide Works put out an interesting research report earlier this week, where he looked at market share of various cell phone platform makers in South Africa.
Indeed.
And found the research really interesting, particularly how dominant Nokia still is.
It's fascinating. You know, I mean, as you saw in that research, the figure is virtually unchanged from the research a year and a half ago at the end of 2010. Mm. And it's sitting around half the market. Mm. I mean, it's just staggering. You know, as we've discussed too, in many ways, you know, those of us who are smartphone users are quite sort of insulated from, I think, the sort of real world on the ground cellular experience that most people have. And we forget that, you know, most people don't have a smartphone, and these remain very, very niche items. As again, the research showed, I mean, you know, the iPhone users will be either delighted because it keeps them exclusive and elitist, or horrified to learn that, you know, according to Goldstuck's research, you're looking at 400,000 iPhones in SA.
Yeah,
which is less than 1%. Yeah. They've actually, Arthur said to me that they've had to round up.
Yeah,
because it's actually less than a percent, but they don't. They like to round them off.
The figure for Apple didn't surprise me at all. I mean, the iPhone is an incredibly expensive device, and
no more expensive than your S3.
But true. But the vast majority of the market isn't going to be buying it. Can't afford an iPhone.
No, indeed.
The figure that surprised me was how few Android users there are. Only 800,000, because Android is available on a wide range of devices.
Indeed, particularly the low end ones. You know, we've seen things like the the low end HTCs and so on that, you know, cost the sort of equivalent of a BlackBerry or a BlackBerry Curve. You know, we're looking at 2,500 rand, that sort of mark, and those are Android devices. I was also surprised. I would have thought we would have seen a couple of million at least.
Yeah, I was surprised by that. I think that may change quite dramatically in the next 12 to 18 months.
Well, this is what we've seen too. The interesting thing about some of that research has been the huge shift. So yeah, one of the enormous ones was WhatsApp as a usage. Last time in the 2010 research, WhatsApp was such a blip, it actually didn't even feature in the research. It was just a sort of 0%. And in this time around, I'm not entirely sure. I seem to recall that the figure was, of those handsets that can use WhatsApp in South Africa, 18% of respondents were using it. And it's gone from you know, not registering at all to suddenly being really prolific and actually competing with the services like BlackBerry's Messenger.
But BlackBerry remains hugely popular as well, despite the loss in market share in developed markets, particularly in North America. The research shows that BlackBerry is actually growing market share quite drastically in South Africa.
And this, I mean, really, if we think about it, isn't that surprising. The value proposition here remains compelling, even more so now that a lot of the operators have dropped the prices for the BlackBerry internet service even further.
Yeah.
You know, you're looking at sort of 20 Rand down from even at 60 Rand, it's a compelling proposition. Particularly, I think, for parents. And it still remains, the BlackBerry remains terribly desirable. You know, I remember last year, we had a chat with Peter Ace from Vodacom, and he was saying that he gave his daughter the option of having any handset she wanted, and she wanted a BlackBerry. And you know, this is the instance where you really could have the top of the range iPhone if you wanted it, and the, you know, teenagers still want BlackBerries. They're terribly desirable, and there is this Arthur talks about it, Arthur Goldstuck, that is, as the sort of cool factor that the brand has somehow managed to hang on to, particularly when it comes to the youth market.
Mm. It's lost that cool factor amongst us techies, I think. But
I think amongst
market,
a lot of corporates too. I think a lot of corporates were using them because it was company policy.
Mm.
And now that that's changing because companies are being forced to, because people want to bring in other devices.
Mm.
I think it's really lost it with the bulk of the adult market, but it remains terribly cool. I mean, with the sort of savvy corporates and the savvy techies, it's absolutely lost
that
sheen.
In the corporate market, a few years ago you wouldn't have seen a CEO without a BlackBerry. Now you won't see a CEO without an iPhone.
It's
definitely switched, but certainly in that youth market, you're right, it continues to do incredibly well.
The question is, of course, whether it can replicate this in other developing markets quickly enough.
Well, apparently it's doing really well in many other developing markets, sure. including Indonesia, Mexico. I remember the full list, but South Africa is doing, I mean, particularly well. I wouldn't be surprised if it's one of the best performing of BlackBerry's emerging markets. But it's not only South Africa where BlackBerry is performing particularly strongly.
It's about whether it can offset the losses in other markets, or at least offset them long enough to innovate. I mean,
And will the problems it's facing in markets like North America actually destroy the company, even though they're still so popular in markets like SA?
Absolutely.
Mm. 2 years from now, there may be no more research in motion. As I said in my column this week, I'm sure that both BlackBerry and RIM and Nokia wish that their market shares in South Africa were reflective on the world stage.
Absolutely.
Certainly not.
No, I think those sort of figures are fascinating. You know, these sort of reports are great, and they remind us that of what, you know, the real world perhaps actually looks like, because we are somewhat insulated from it, and we do get a very limited view of these sorts of things outside of reports like this.
Just lastly on this report, the other figure that grabbed my attention was that China ZTE grabbed 2% of the market in South Africa, of the cell phone market in South Africa, and that's from nowhere 18 months previously. I wouldn't be surprised if we see in the next 12 to 18 months that both ZTE and its main rival in China, Huawei, grab a much bigger chunk of the market.
Absolutely.
These cheap device, cheap, really actually quite good quality devices that they're bringing to market now.
And international reports suggest this is exactly where it's going. You know, we recently had a look at a Gartner report on similar sort of stats on the popularity of different handsets and operating systems. And ZTE and Huawei both feature quite prominently. Mm. They're really, on the up. And having actually played with some of the handsets, you know, I haven't actually seen much in the way of ZTE handsets, but we had one of the high-end or higher-end Huawei devices recently, and it was really excellent.
Which one was that again?
And I'm trying to remember what the model was.
Was it the Honor?
It was the Honor, yeah.
The Huawei Honor.
And that device was just...
For the price, it was great.
Was just excellent. And, you know, these really are the biggest threat to both BlackBerry and Nokia, are these sorts of budget smartphones.
Yeah. And Samsung plays in that space as well, of course.
Indeed. You know, when it gets to the cost of where you can have a touchscreen sort of knockoff smartphone for the same price as BlackBerry Curve, and the data is cheap enough, is the other obstacle to warrant buying it rather than wanting a flat rate, then this is what erodes BlackBerry's sort of value proposition.
The other interesting stat that I thought was particularly insightful was that Samsung lost a huge market share of the last 18 months, falling from 28% of the market to 18% of the market.
Indeed.
And that must be concerning the local executives at Samsung.
Absolutely. Because also this, again, outside of these sort of reports, these certainly aren't the impressions we're given. You know, I think you and I both imagined that Samsung's market share would have gone up, certainly, or at least, at the very least, perhaps remained stable, but not declined.
Mm.
That came as quite a surprise.
It seems that Samsung has lost market share to BlackBerry.
And I was just thinking, you know, I've been seeing Samsung's really pushing the high end. You know, we've seen with the first Galaxy and the second, and now especially the third. You know, it's plastered on billboards everywhere. It's a massive marketing drive to make that the smartphone of choice. But what we're not seeing is as many Samsung handsets in the mid-range or Samsung feature phones.
I remember seeing a lot more. Yeah, you're right. Yeah.
And we forget that this market, this is really where you make the, this is where you sell on volume.
They used to be huge in the feature phone market. At one stage they were giving Nokia a real run for their money, but yeah, you're right. Although you walk into a retailer like CNA or Edgar's or something, and you see the phones that are sitting there, and half of them are Samsungs.
Sure.
That's
interesting. So
they do play in that space.
But why they haven't been successful in it is interesting.
And why they've lost so much market share. Yeah. Mm. It's going to be fascinating to look at Arthur's next report when it comes out in 18 months from now.
Indeed.
Good. Just lastly, before we get on to our picks of the week, MTN, had a chat with Carl Pinar, as I mentioned earlier in the show, at their results presentation last week now. And he revealed to us that they're going to be launching they're probably going to be launching their 4G LTE network by the end of this year.
Which is pretty exciting. I gather the part of it is that they've gotten tired of the waiting. They've gotten tired of waiting for Spectrum or for someone to make a plan. And so they're going to be doing this with Refarmed, which is sort of reallocated existing Spectrum.
Yeah. So they're only going to do this in areas where they can actually reform the Spectrum. So you're probably not going to find them doing it in the middle of Sandton. However, you will find them doing it on the edges of the cities. So they're big areas in Johannesburg, Pretoria, Cape Town, and Durban that they're planning to launch. They're going to have about 400 towers, LTE towers, ready for service before they switch it on commercially.
And we know they've been working hard to get towers ready because all of the towers require fiber backhaul to actually offer LTE services. This is great news. I mean,
that's great.
I'd be fascinating. It's I'm intrigued to see what it costs. We've of course had some pleasant experiences with our limited trials of LTE. We've been fortunate enough to test MTN's LTE network occasionally. Unfortunately, we don't have coverage here at the office, and so our ability to use it has been limited. But when we have done, you know, we're seeing the sorts of speeds that are promised. I've seen between 30 and 40 meg down speeds and in the region of 20 up, which puts my 4 meg fixed line to shame.
It's a pity there's no reception here, because when I've played with it in areas where there is coverage, it's been absolutely fantastic.
Yeah, it's just monstrous. But it'd be great to see. There are certainly those out there who will pay for this sort of service. There are those who will want it.
There's no way that it can be any more expensive per megabyte than the current fees. if anything, it should be cheaper because they're going to need to
encourage uptake. Yeah?
Exactly. Great, Craig. Let's get on to our picks of the week. What have you got this week?
So there's been much excitement this week online and from some of the sort of South African trendsetters, it seems, about a new music streaming service that's launching at the end of the month called SimFi. I see it's spelled SimFy. There was some discussion about whether it was SimFi or what it was, but I believe it's SimFi. It's a German company that's set to compete with the likes of Spotify and Rhapsody and these sorts of music streaming services where you pay a monthly rate and in exchange have access to millions and millions of tracks online. And one of the benefits of these services, too, is that increasingly you can save music to devices, whether it's your desktop or a tablet or a phone, and actually download music to it. Not download and then share again, but download so that you don't always have to be connected to use the service. This is, of course, the challenge of streaming services, is if you don't have internet coverage, which can certainly be a problem, especially if you're on the road, then you can't get the music. And this is something they've had to work around. So the idea is you can download music to your device and then plug your phone in your car or use it any way you normally would. So traditionally, those who've been wanting to use these services have had to use various sneaky methods and virtual private networks and so on to get around the international restrictions. And SimFi Africa is a fully fledged, properly endorsed local version. I've been spending a little bit of time playing with the service, and there is an app for, at the moment there are applications for Android, for iPhone, and for BlackBerry devices, and I've been using the app on my iPhone, and so far so good. It's really simple to use. It just covers things like your playlists, your favorites. The interface is very similar to the online interface. But most importantly, there's the downloads feature. So if you pick an album or you find a song or an album that you like, or you have a playlist of, say, your favorite tracks, you can just tell the app to please download those to your device. There's no limitations to how much you can download. You're only limited by how much storage space there is on your actual device, which is in breaking with some of the other services that allow you to download a certain number of tracks. And so far, so good. I particularly like the fact that the app also tells you if you're downloading tracks, gives you a little notification on the icon as to how many tracks are left to do. And obviously, the idea is that you set your downloads up while you're on a Wi-Fi connection and preferably not over 3G. There is actually a setting that you can turn off the option to download over 3G, which it's set to by default, so that you don't accidentally download a 100 meg album using your 3G data. So the idea, I suppose, really
while
is...
while roaming.
Yeah, exactly, is to use the app over Wi-Fi and sort of stock up on the music you want so that you've got it for offline listening when you're on the go. I've been pretty impressed so far. The quality seems to be great.
The catalogue doesn't seem to be all that comprehensive, though.
Well, the catalogue... So there's supposedly 18 million songs. I have been trying to stump it by asking for particularly obscure stuff. In its defense, in terms of most of your most of the sorts of things you'd expect to find, it does pretty well.
Hmm.
But once you get onto to rarities, it also seems to depend on the genre. You know, some other users I've been talking to who've been testing it have said they found the most bizarre things. Well, yeah. I've considered them bizarre. On the service, so I think.
What were you talking about the other day? Swedish death folk metal or something?
Something along those lines. Something I'd never heard of. And they said a friend of mine told me that she had found all of the major albums she wanted from this peculiar genre. We tried it earlier with a couple of obscurities. I couldn't find all of the sort of rock and folk bands I wanted, but I have been able to find a lot of sort of obvious stuff. You know, I found everything from Paul Simon to Belle and Sebastian to current pop songs. I've given it quite a good trial. The service is going to cost £60 a month, and that is regardless of how many months you sign up for. And the catalogue supposedly gets expanded every month. We'll have a full review of the service up on the site next week. But so far, I'm very impressed. I think this is, you know, we found out that this is actually a sort of partnership with Exact Mobile.
Hmm.
It's the kind of, there's definitely a gap for it in the South African market. You know, we've got a couple of internet radio stations that are doing fun things. But in terms of this sort of I gather the Nokia offering, firstly isn't as comprehensive, but it's also not cross-platform. You know, you can't get the Nokia offering on your desktop.
Oh, you can't?
Or perhaps you can. I don't want to put my foot in it. I'll have to check. But you certainly can't get it on an Android device or on an iPhone.
Sure.
And this is one of the things where, you know, if you could get an account, and I think you can use it on up to 3 mobile devices. So conceivably, you could also use it on, you know, if you're a couple, you could use it on, you know, both of your phones and then
yeah.
a tablet at home. It's looking like a pretty compelling offering. We'll have a full review up next week, but that's certainly my pick of the week as an app, because that's all I've been fiddling with in recent days.
Cool. And who's behind it? It's Exact Mobile, which is owned by Prime Media, right?
That's right, in partnership with this German company, Simfy. They're in half a dozen European countries, and this seems to be the first African rendition, but so far, so great.
Oh, the only question it raises is, why is it taking Apple so long to bring their iTunes music store to South Africa?
If
companies like Nokia and Simfy through Exact Mobile can do it.
And they're going to get, you know, if they don't do it, they're going to get overtaken.
Yeah.
There's certainly a market that's hungry for this sort of thing.
I'm kind of hoping that we're going to see more services from Microsoft when Windows 8 launches officially on October the 26th through their online services. You know, I had the opportunity earlier this year to play around with the Zune online service, and it's absolutely brilliant.
Mm.
But you have to tell your computer you live in the US, you have to get a voucher, it's a pain.
Sure.
So I'm not subscribed to it anymore, but fantastic service. I'd love to see Microsoft bring that to the market South Africa. And if Microsoft does it, Apple will surely follow.
And this is the other value of, or at least at the moment, until these sorts of things roll out, this is the big advantage for services like Simfy. You know, there's a demand, and at the moment there are very limited other options. And it's not expensive, particularly, and you don't have to commit for too long.
Yes, yes. Good. Well, I look forward to your review, Craig. My pick, nice simple pick this week, is an app called Fuellog. It's for Android. I'm sure it runs on other platforms as well, though. There's a pro version as well, which gives you some additional graphing options. But I recently bought a hybrid car, and I've been really interested in monitoring my fuel consumption and performance. So what you do is, when you fill up your car, you just literally fire up this app, tell it how much you've spent, how much the petrol price is, and how many liters you've put in the engine. In fact, you don't even have to tell it the petrol price, because it works that out for you. And then you can chart this and also see interesting stats and graphs in the app. To see how you've driven since your last top up, and how your average fuel consumption is going. It's actually something I've always wanted to monitor, and I've never really checked if there was an app that would do this for you. But Fuel Log, it works really, really well. And the Pro option, which I haven't bought yet, but I may do so, gives you all sorts of additional graphing options. So check it out. Fuel Log is available in the Play Store. I'm sure it's available on iOS as well, though I haven't checked. Craig is actually having a quick squiz on his iPhone.
Just checking, is that the one?
It is available there as
yes,
well.
Yes, it is available.
I think that's the same one. The icon is different, so maybe not. But check it out. Craig, that's all the time we have for this week's show. As always, if you've got any feedback on the show, you can send us an email at info@techcentral.co.za. From myself and Craig Wilson, until next time, cheers.